Broadcasting live statewide from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightline with Pete Schwabba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. Whatever gets you through the night, it's all right, it's all right. And now, a guy who has a black and white plasma TV, Pete Schwabba.
With James Runde right now. He's a Madison-based musician and filmmaker hanging out with me here in the studio tonight. So fun to have you here, dude.
Thanks for having me. Fun to be here.
I will have that last song. It was called Marie's
Fish and Chicken Stand. Yeah, Marie's Fish and Chicken. Yeah.
I'm going to have that in my head. Hey, where can people find out more about the Scratch-Offs or you personally? You got a website? You sell your music anywhere?
Yeah, so, So you can, if you're curious about seeing us live, the best place to check us out is Instagram or Facebook. Both times it's just The Scratch Offs. So like Instagram.com/The Scratch Offs, all one word, no dashes or anything. And that'll get us on Facebook and Instagram are both formatted that way. So that's where we post about shows if we're coming to your town. And then as for finding our music, we're of course on Spotify, and then we also have a Bandcamp page. So if you want to support us directly with your dollars, and buy like a record or a hat or some say, you know, you can, look at our Bandcamp page and purchase that stuff there. Or find us at a show. We always have that stuff for sale at our shows.
So that's the best, right?
That's the best way to get it, because then you get dialogue with us, the musicians, you know, and you don't have to pay shipping.
That's another perk. So where can, so the show's on statewide. Where do you like to play? What's your favorite venue here in Madison?
So by far the spot we play the most is Mickey's Tavern on Willie Street, right where the Yahara passes through the Isthmus. And that is a stalwart.
I only understood two of those
venue words,
by the way.
Really?
I know. I only know what an isthmus is because I spent a lot of time in Madison. I didn't catch the first myth. One.
Mickey's is like, if you go talk to punk bands in Chicago, they'll have heard of Mickey's. And same with Minneapolis and all, you know, Mickey's is kind of hallowed ground. It's in as far as Madison venues go, they've been having live music for a long time. And then if we're doing a show that's bigger than what can fit in Mickey's, we'll play the Crystal Corner on Willie Street. And they've been having live music since probably like the 50s or 60s. Oh, nice. They have like all these photos of old blues musicians that played there way back when. So that's kind of your old school neighborhood bar.
Very cool. So what about, where else in the state do you like to play? Do you have a favorite in Milwaukee or Green Bay or?
Yeah,
upstate?
In Green Bay, we've played Lyric Room. And I'm not sure, I heard something that Lyric Room in Green Bay might be closing, but that was, for a long time, that was the spot to go. Frets and Friends in Green Bay too, right? I think is another, that's what, I think we played one show there. And then Milwaukee is trickier. There, you know, we've played Cactus Club. Didn't have the greatest experience there.
Oh, no.
But and then
so like a
Bremen Cafe,
Blues Brothers and, type experience. People throwing booze at the chicken
I'll just
coop.
Say it's hard to get paid as an amateur musician. And there's a lot of there's a lot of places out there that kind of have borderline scammy arrangements. And can come off, or at least like, you know, so one thing that was nice about Mickey's is that, you know, touring bands, sometimes you have to tour, you know, off nights. Not every night of the week is a Friday or a Saturday.
Right.
So if you can pull, you know, 50 people on a Sunday in the middle of, you know, early March or late February, you know, on a Sunday night, that's a good crowd for a Sunday night, you know? And so you would at least expect maybe you would get gas money out of that arrangement. But, you know, that's not every venue.
Right. So, okay. So in terms of, you're also a filmmaker. You're White and Lazy, a short you did. It's still one of my favorite shorts I've seen. I it's just hilarious. Where can people see White and Lazy?
YouTube.
All right. Go Google.
And no budge. Yeah.
Go Google White and Lazy on YouTube. And it's just a great, the whole premise is just a guy trying to get his roommates to pay the rent so he can give it to the landlord.
Yeah.
And it's just a great slacker, fun.
And if you've lived in a house with a bunch of young, irresponsible other, you know, peers, then you'll feel the main character's pain.
So is, what do you say about Wisconsin as a film community and as a music community? Mm-hmm. Where is it thriving more, or are they both really healthy, would you say?
Well, I think music is thriving more. I think that's pretty like without debate, in my opinion. But that's because, and the reason Wisconsin's a great place to play music because, and I'll tell you why, really, because the towns and this not Madison and Milwaukee really are supportive. I guess that was my thought is that we earn more money in Green Bay than we did in Milwaukee, so, and Stevens Point and all these places are a lot more, and La Crosse and just more kind of, and Janesville even are more generous with their dollars, I find, than even Madison and them. I mean, obviously Madison and Milwaukee have a lot of great bands and there's always creative fuel, but I think what's really separates Madison's music or Wisconsin's music scene is the contribution of, like bands from not Madison and Milwaukee, really, and especially Appleton and Green Bay, like Catholic Boys and Dusk and Tenement, and all they've had a long tradition of bands from up in the Fox Valley that are really good.
Oh, cool.
So
that's good to know. And I know they probably feel like, or they know they have to pay you to come from Madison or Milwaukee to come to these towns. And if they're willing to pay, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have you got something else we can
hit? Yeah, I could do a cover. I'll leave it up to you.
Want.
Yeah, would you rather you pick Bob Dylan or Willie Nelson?
What's the Willie Nelson tune?
Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain.
Absolutely, Willie Nelson.
Okay.
Yeah, this is James Rennie singing Willie Nelson. This
is
we'll
see if I can hit the notes. Twilight glow, I see her. Blue eyes crying in the rain. And I knew that when we parted, we'd never see her again. Love is like a dying ember, only memories remain. And through the ages I'll Rondé. Singing some Willie Nelson, that was great. I love Willie Nelson. He's 90 now. Yeah, he's still kicking, unbelievably.
They just announced that he was singing with Kermit the Frog the Rainbow Connection song, which is such a great song. It was the first time they ever did it together at the same time. I love Bob Dylan, but I don't know, there's something about Willie Nelson.
Yeah, it's great.
His voice is so different and cool and... That was great, man.
He made pot smoking okay. You know what I mean? I don't know. He was kind of one of the early... I mean, he was Snoop Dogg before Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
If you think about it. I mean, what did people think? I mean, you lived through the 70s and the 80s. Like, what was the vanguard of stoners? I guess Cheech and Chong.
Yeah, Cheech and Chong.
And it was Willie Nelson.
It was just like a taboo thing. You just didn't do that because drugs.
Oh, yeah, of course. And then there was I grew up in that era.
But I think we would have got there anyway, but I think Willie Nelson and Snoop Dogg, like, you know, fostered it a little bit, maybe pushed it along.
But like, you know, like even conservative types would listen to Willie Nelson.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he like snuck under the radar there before other.
Yeah, he did. He's a bridge builder, yes, if you would, whether it's through the
coalition, pot,
whether it's through the weed or through the music. People love the guy. And that was great, man. When you guys play Green Bay, you have to give me some heads up. Or the Fox Valley. You guys have to come in. Mm-hmm. We got a lot of space up there in the studio. I'd love to have all of the scratch-offs in there jamming out. That would be really
fun. That'd be great. I mean, now it's easier to fit us now that we only got three instead of four.
All right, I got time. Conrad, how are we doing?
We got about a minute.
Okay.
Mm, 1 minute to fill?
Okay. Well, we'll wrap up then, I guess. But
Yeah, this was lovely to come on. Honestly, I'm excited that you had me in here talking once about movies and second about music.
Yeah.
And so if anybody listened to the songs tonight and really dug what was going on, the name of the band is The Scratch-Offs. I just want to say that one last
check
time
them out.
I always forget to say
on
that.
Spotify. And James, thank you so much. Look for his music. Look for him playing live. Thanks so much. This is Pete Schwabit and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network. Of the Firehouse Comedy Club in Sturgeon Bay. He is giving us some time tonight to tell us a little bit about the cool things they're doing there at the Firehouse Comedy Club. So you were in the middle of telling me who your favorite comics are.
Yeah. So I started when I was very young. I would take my parents' iPhones because I wasn't allowed to have one, and I would listen to the Blue Collar Comedy Tour, the Pandora station for them. Nice. To just Jeff Foxworthy, Larry the Cable Guy, Ron White, Bill Engvall over and over and over again. In fact, my grandfather knew I liked them so much, he took me to see Delta Farce, the movie they released. I don't know if you checked that out.
I have not, but check it out.
It's okay.
Really? Okay.
It's okay. But then I kind of graduated to listening to Lewis Black. My mom thought he was funny. He was the first comedian I was allowed to watch that swore a lot.
Right.
And I kind of fell in love with what he did. Then from Lewis Black to Carlin, and now kind of the more modern comics that you would see performing like a lot these days, I would say. Probably Mike Birbiglia. I think he's really fantastic. I think I've been listening a lot to... I listened to John Mulaney a lot. I really liked Comeback Kid. And then I think it was Neil Brennan. I listened to his podcast a lot. I really liked Three Mics. I don't know if you've seen that. That's a great thing. And then, of course, the top one's got to be Bo Burnham. What he does is, I think, a little bit more art than anything. If you've not checked him out, he's incredible.
I have not, but I will now. Those are some really good influences. All the blue collar guys are great guys. And
absolutely.
I worked with Lewis Black years ago in Pittsburgh when before he was just about to pop. And I was like, oh, this guy's got he's got such a great point of view, you know,
absolutely.
And a really just a fun guy to talk to too. But, those are great influences. Well, good for you. If money were no object, who would you book at your club?
Oh, if money were no object, if money were no object, I would like to get Mulaney. If time is no object, I would like to get Carlin. If I can pull anyone from anywhere,
that would be something.
But yeah, I would say if money were no object, the first person I'd like to get up there is Mulaney, just to watch him perform in a room.
Yeah.
Probably Mulaney and then Neil Brennan, I would say, because I'd like to watch him perform just because he's such a good writer. I think watching him be up on stage would be such an experience to learn from.
Do you, you do stand up too. Do you work clean or what is your act? Observational, more satirical?
My act has to do a lot with with my life. Since I went to theater school, I got stuck in monologues. I had teachers drilling me on monologues over and over again.
Okay.
So I basically just wrote monologues about my life, talking about being a Boy Scout and growing up that way, all the different people I dated when I was younger, what being married is like, what it's like, you know, being a Wisconsinite now, having come from Georgia.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I had to change my whole accent just to fit in with everybody. This is a fake accent that I use. So people, you know,
I got to be honest with you. Time. You got a ways to go before you get the Wisconsin accent. I'm still here in Georgia, buddy.
Oh, I don't want the Wisconsin one. I just don't want you to realize how much of a hick I actually am.
You want to be more ambiguous.
I grew up in a town that's primary export was tobacco
okay.
and badly educated children.
Oh, dear. What's more challenging, Asher? Owning funny or being funny?
Well, I will say this. Being funny is something that you can work on personally and you can put in hard work to get better at it through time. Owning funny is hard because you can sometimes the money's just not there. Sometimes the schedule's just not there and there's not a dang thing you can do about it. That is what sucks when you have people you want to bring up, but you just don't have enough to get that, you know, to get that night going. You don't have enough people to come no matter how many times you put flyers up, that kind of thing. That's what sucks. The stuff that is kind of out of your control once you put out the stuff, put it on.
That's interesting. Have you had issues with hecklers yet? I mean, I would think doing shows sporadically like you do and making them kind of events, people are more into them and maybe less inclined to heckle, but there's always booze. So have you had to deal with that yet?
I have not gotten booed yet. And I'm sure when it does happen, it will shatter my ego. I'm extremely vain. The moment someone tells me they don't like me, I'm going to crumble like feta cheese. But no, again, I was very lucky to grow up in the No Shame scene. I don't know if you've ever been to a No Shame theater.
No.
But they're all over the country. They're this combination open mic and like freeform artist session. So the first 300 to 400 open mics I did were all with this idea that No Shame, the whole idea of No Shame Theater. So when you went up there and you did bad, and boy howdy, did we do bad. people would shout at you, but they wouldn't heckle you. They would just shout No Shame at you. And it was a way to say, hey, you're up there doing a thing that none of us have the stones to get up and do, you know, congratulations to you. And so I haven't been heckled yet. When I do, I've got a couple of pretty bad comebacks ready to go, but it's one of those things you can't get better at until you practice it.
Until it happens.
And when I do start practicing it, hopefully I stand up to it.
My guest is Asher Brooks. He is the owner of the Firehouse Comedy Club. Was it hard to find a space? You mentioned that you found like they're yes. kind of in on it with you. How long were you looking for a space until you realized this is great, you know?
Well, the space we have is fantastic. True. I couldn't ask for a better space. We've got a stage, we've got lights, we've got a bar in the space with us. I mean, it's everything you could want. I don't know if you've ever been to Skyline. We're about the same size
sure.
as Skyline.
Oh, wow.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Yes. It's really, really great. But for a little while, the first line I had on a place was the underside of a pizza restaurant. They were really chill. They were a really great place. I talked to them a couple of times about it. Things really didn't go anywhere with them, which is okay. I got the current space lined up the moment I posted about our first show. The pizza place gave me a ring, was like, hey, man, we really want to make a move. We want to pull the trigger on it. And I was like, I'm so sorry. You know,
yeah,
we don't have the time now, but I'm very lucky we got the space that we did, because I do not want to have to compete with somebody's, you know, pepperoni and hot, you know, never want to compete with dinner when it's time for comedy, because right. I am not more interesting than a plate of spaghetti.
Right. So how beautiful is Door County? Do you love it there?
I do. It's gorgeous. If you've not been, you know, this is not an ad for the tourism board, but if you've not been, check us out. It's a beautiful place to come and relax. The average age of the county is about 900. So definitely bring, you know, you bring your shuffleboard shoes
and
all the different things you need. But during the summer, we get probably with the population of the county, I think triples or over doubles over like over 10 times.
Yeah.
So it's mostly young people in bachelorette parties and family reunions and all that. So half the time the county is really quiet and serene and beautiful. My wife and I got our wedding pictures taken up here.
Oh,
and
nice.
Then the other half of the time it is full of people, you know, hot and full of excitement and people running around, and every bar is full of people having a great time and enjoying themselves. So it's a cool place to live.
Yeah, it's a naturally beautiful area. We've got about 15 seconds left, buddy. I need a TV recommendation or a movie recommendation very quickly.
Movie recommendation. Go see Dune 1 and 2. If you haven't read the book, don't worry about it. Go see the movie Dune 1 and 2. It's fantastic.
We will leave it there. Asher, thank you so much. And best of luck. Let's talk some more. I wish you a lot of luck with your comedy club endeavor. It sounds great.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for having me, man. I appreciate it, Pete.
Anytime. Great meeting you. All right. That's Asher Brooks. Check out the Firehouse Comedy Club in Sturgeon Bay. Go support live comedy. It's so great and so important for our area. On Nightlight, I'm Pete Schwab. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Until I meet the doll, Mrs. Princess, who often wonder what makes her work. I guess I'll leave that question to the experts. Assuming that there are some out there, they're probably alone. Solitaire. I can remember when I caught up with a pastime intimate friend. She said, but you're probably gonna say I look lovely.
Did you miss what's hot from Wisconsin to Hollywood? Listen to Nightlight with Pete Schwabba podcast on civicmedia.us. You can always listen through Spotify, Apple Podcast, or the Civic Media app. Take Nightlight with Pete Schwabba anywhere you go. Once again, here is your host, Pete Schwabba.
We are going to move on. I'm very excited to announce this next guest. He's a friend of mine. That's irrelevant because he's interesting either way, but he's a great guy. And he is the founder of Wisconsinology.com. An accomplished musician and animator, and he's a Nightlight bestie. Frank Anderson. Hey, Frank.
Pete, I have to ask you a question.
Oh, please.
I'm very excited. I finally saw a decent film made in Wisconsin.
Oh, is it a love letter to Wisconsin?
It's the direct opposite. Have you had Mike Cheslick on your show, on your TV show?
I have, no. He has not been on PBS with me, but I've seen their two most recent films, The Lake Michigan Monster, and I think the one you're going to tell. Why don't you tell us about the one you're going to...
Hundreds of Beavers. Hundreds of Beavers. It's like the greatest film ever made.
It is fun, isn't it?
It's a riot.
Now, where did you see it, Frank?
Oh, you know I'm in the industry, don't you?
Oh, yeah, but...
Excuse me, let's leave it at that.
fair enough.
I'm urging everyone out there, everyone, keep an eye out. Hundreds of Beavers. Now that's how you make a Wisconsin film.
Yeah, and who knows where they even shot it?
It doesn't matter. No, you... no, I don't. They could have shot it anywhere. It's, you know, so heavily animated.
Yeah.
But live action and animation. But it is fall down funny. We haven't seen gags like that since Eddie Klein from Kenosha directed Buster Keaton or W.C. Fields. We haven't seen that kind of fun. And just when I was feeling down, when I thought Hollywood is just cookie cutter this and cookie cutter that, out comes a great Wisconsin director to say, no, I defy you. Nobody has won more audience awards ever in the film festival circuit than this movie.
Is that true?
That is absolutely true.
Oh, that is terrific. Wow. Well, okay, so you're an animator, Frank. Tell me how, I've asked people after seeing that film, I'm like, how do they do some of that? And like people that are savvy are like, I have no idea. So do you know how they pulled off some of that? Obviously, there's some green screen, there's some location, but I don't know. How do they do that?
It's green screen, location, mishmash. It's charmingly simple how it was done.
Yeah.
And it points to, you know, I mean, he's making this movie. He's getting all the shots done, and he's doing it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, and all in service of the gags, because that's just wall-to-wall slapstick. And he broke every rule of how do you get a film made and how do you get a film sold. You broke every rule. There's no three-act arc going on.
Right.
There's no stupid Wisconsin rom-com going on. You know? There's no love letter. It's weird and surrealistic. I think my advice to all young filmmakers out there, just be so unbelievable. Be yourself. Be different.
Absolutely. Break the rules.
Yeah. I was just wondering if you knew him.
You know, I have not met him, but I've swapped emails with him and I can never remember the main actor, Rickson Twos or something like that. I can tell you, I'll just pull him up. But he's very funny. He carries the whole movie as an actor.
Right.
And that's tough.
I've never seen a modern actor play gags so well. Right. You know, some people can easily overact gags.
Yeah.
This guy does it right.
He does. And there's one scene, Frank, in the film where like it's kind of him against all the beavers. He's a fur trapper and it's him against all the beavers, and the beavers, I think, put one over on him. So they send out a beaver to give him like a Bugs Bunny, Yosemite Sam kind of like seductive look or something. And there's almost no dialogue, but the lead actor, Ryland Brixen Cole Twos, he's got four names. And I couldn't think of two of them. So he looks at the beaver and he just goes, I was watching it with my son and we just both lost it. It's so silly and so fun. Yeah. People have to see this movie.
And this all began really with the Lake Michigan Monster.
Yeah.
And I remember being told by so many people in Wisconsin, they were naysaying. And all I could think of was I had seen something I'd never seen before.
Yeah.
It was different top to bottom. It broke every single rule. There's not one single bit of, I don't know if we should do it that way. You know, you got to, you know, that right. sort of thing. But anyway, it's great. And keep an eye out. It's going to be streaming soon.
It's going to be streaming soon. And not only that, like you said, with the Lake Michigan Monster, Frank, yeah, they're breaking the rules, but it's part of it is out of necessity. Like they didn't have any money. Mm-hmm. So what do? You get creative, you get innovative, and you just do something. And they did it both of these. Beavers is funnier, but the Lake Michigan Monster, they're both incredibly creative.
Yes. And unique. I've seen nothing like them. Nothing.
Agreed.
And I watch movies all the time after midnight and I've never been. And thank God he's from Wisconsin.
UWM, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's incredible.
The only other Wisconsin actor who was as great was the legendary Bruno the Bear, who played Gentle Ben on the TV series in the 60s.
Oh, funny.
From White Lake, Wisconsin. Great. And he was in Life and Times of Judge Roy Bean with Paul Newman.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So this is cool because both of these movies are just like, it says they've made $140,000 at the box office. That's like, that doesn't sound like a lot, but I guarantee you the film cost almost nothing. Yeah, you're right. It says they have 18 wins and probably a lot of those are audience. Yeah. It's just fun.
All audience awards.
Yeah. That's great stuff. Okay. So, any word, and let's see now though, Frank, if they get like this big deal, if they can say no to Julia Roberts who wants to appear in his next film somehow, you know,
I don't think he's going to go that way. And if he does, it'll be for the money, you know, get your $2-3 million, director's fee and everything else and run, which I would admire greatly.
Absolutely. No, they're supposed to be on the show in the next couple of weeks. I'm excited to talk. I've only talked to Ryland over email and I just met Mike over email. So, and Kurt Ravenwood is a Wisconsin guy. I met him at I think the Wisconsin Film Festival a few years ago. He made a short or something like that, but nice guy.
Well, kindly tell them that this means nothing because I've been losing, I'm at a low point in my audience. Over at Wisconsinology, but I'm working. I can work back up.
That's terrible.
Tony, that's due to my laziness.
Oh, okay. Well, at least
when
you
I
have...
get going, it'll be good. But I gave them a rave review. I called it the greatest movie ever.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
All right. Well, I'll be sure and mention that when they're on the show as well. So we'll see if we can generate some. Go there now. If you're listening, check out Wisconsinology and read about hundreds of beavers.
Facebook.
Or Facebook. Yeah. And don't do it now. Listen to this.
Wisconsinology Facebook.
Okay.
You prefer. The,
You prefer that over the going to the actual website?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's easier. It's faster. I do it quicker. I'm lazier on the website. Oh. I kind of store things on the website.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah,
and it's a month from now when I do the massive transfer of everything I've done in the past 6 months over to the website.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, you've had some cool stuff on Facebook, Frank, and we'll get to some of that as well, too. But I did last night tease that we were going to talk a little bit about John Kennedy and his connection to Wisconsin. And you and I kind of almost went there in your last visit. And just the Kennedy clan as a whole, I know two instances of when John F. Kennedy was here. And I'm guessing you know a whole lot more. So let's start with you.
Well, sure. He was, I'm not being facetious at all when I say John Kennedy loved the Green Bay Packers more than any football team.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but his main connection to Wisconsin is that Wisconsin is so heavily Catholic.
Oh, yeah.
And his sister Rose, who had the unfortunate lobotomy, was taken care of at St. Coletta's in Jefferson, Wisconsin, till the day she died. Their connection here was enormous. And then Bobby Kennedy was Joe McCarthy's right-hand man.
Right.
And Joe McCarthy's funeral, which I write about in my book, one of the most hilarious, surreal funerals in history, at the end of which Bobby Kennedy alone goes out by Joe's freshly dug grave and has a chat with him for a quiet, private chat.
Really?
Talking to his headstone for an hour before the sun went down.
No kidding.
Yeah. And of course, JFK, what made him was the Wisconsin primary of 1960.
Yeah.
And we talked last time about the movie Primary, which everyone should see.
Oh, yeah.
It's in the Criterion Collection, and it's on Turner Classic Movies every November, and you can call it up instantly streaming. I'd urge everybody to watch it. It goes by quick. It's famous for being the first cinema verite movie ever.
Really?
Which falls right into the trap, my trap of we're the number one state in firsts. So we have the first cinema verite film ever in Primary, and everyone should watch it. You cannot understand that Wisconsin without watching that film, and then you quickly get it. The Western unpopulated side is full of Protestants, Lutherans.
Right.
The coast from Milwaukee to Green Bay and up to our county, well, that's where everybody lives, and they're all Catholic.
They're going
nuts because they have this young, handsome, fresh Catholic candidate. And it's like the Beatles arrived when he descends upon Milwaukee and Nina and Green Bay.
Jeez. Yeah, I got the film right here, 1960, Primary. Okay. And they're calling it Cinema Verite, feature that follows presidential hopefuls John F. Kennedy and Hubert H. Humphrey during the 1960 Wisconsin primary. Oh, man, that is great. Okay. I'm definitely going to check that out.
Yeah, I mean, a real quick example from that film. They cut from Kennedy with nuns fainting in droves and priests coming over and giving me the punch in the shoulder. Hey, Johnny, you know, people screaming and smiling. Cut to Hubert Humphrey in some godforsaken little Norwegian town with three farmers, dour farmers, who probably killed themselves the next day, looking at Hubert Humphrey, and he goes, yeah, my mother knew a good Norwegian cup of coffee when she made it. Dead silence. You know, you want to go back to where everybody's having fun, the Catholics, they're having fun.
You cannot compete with fanfare. And he just had it. And it was just, he was magnetic. And I'll tell you, I think I hit on this last time a little bit. John F. Kennedy spoke at Maronite Catholic Central High School, which is where I went to high school. And on his way out the back door to his limo or car or whatever, he had to use the restroom. And he went in and used the convent restroom. And he was in there for a while. So you can imagine, you know. But that became my mom's office when she was the foundation director at Maronite Catholic Central. And I remember looking at the toilet and go, John Kennedy sat here. So let's leave it at that. And we'll pick up there. We'll pick up there in just a minute. Coming up next, more with Frank Anderson. We're talking John F. Kennedy. We're going to talk the father of Wisconsin and a lot of other stuff. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I was walking down the street. I was feeling all right. I'm with my boys. I'm with my troops here. Down along the avenue, some guys were shooting pool, and I heard the sound of acapella groove. Singing late in the evening, and all the girls out on the stoops.
Welcome back. We are talking with Frank Anderson of Wisconsinology about John F. Kennedy's connections and the Kennedy clan, really, their connection to the state of Wisconsin. So, Frank, so that was my story. Kennedy used the restroom at the convent and people lost their mind. And
I bet they all had to sit there.
there was probably a long line after that. And he...
Did you?
I don't remember. I'm more of a... You know, all right, I'm going to tell you a story, Frank. I'm going to go off on a tangent here just to geek out at what I like to do when I see historical things, when I know something happened in a spot. All right, stop me if I've told you this, because I feel like it is a story I would have told you. When I was doing stand-up comedy and traveling all over in the 90s, my wife went with me to Indianapolis, and the hotel they put us up in was right down the street from Benjamin Harrison's home. So we toured it. You know, it's a president, the U.S. president's home. We toured it. And it looked like we were bothering the guy who gives the tours, but we decided to take the tour anyway. And he showed us, and all throughout the tour, I'm saying, this is, he liked to cook and this is the stove he used. And the guy's like, yeah, that's the stove. It's like all restored stuff. So we're going through and I'm geeking out and it's kind of cool. And finally, after a half hour, this kid, he's like 18, is kind of rolling his eyes at everything I'm saying. We get to the bedroom and he says something like, that bed was gifted to him by Abraham Lincoln. And that's the bed he died in. And I looked at him, I said, Benjamin Harrison died in this bed? You're telling me he died right here? And the kid finally says, it's just Benjamin Harrison, man. So I like to look at something and take in the moment. And that's kind of what I did with this toilet. I was like, John F. Kennedy sat there. Now, this was like the early 80s, maybe. So it was probably 20. Maybe they had changed the seat. I don't know. But it was referred to as Camelot's throne after that. And people had a lot of fun with it. So,
whoa.
Yeah.
Well, it is just Benjamin Harrison.
Yeah, it's just Benjamin Harrison, man. And you know what? He was kind of right.
Well, it's just Millard Fillmore, man. Yeah.
It was just William Henry Harrison. He didn't even have time to take a nap in the bed. But the other thing I know about Kennedy is the last time he was on U.S. soil was in Ashland, Wisconsin, and it was in November of the year he died. I was at the tiny airport in Ashland once and there's a plaque there. And I thought, wow, that's really cool. Like knowing he was standing right here. And yeah, it was just kind of a cool thing.
Yeah. He was there to dedicate, some wetlands preserve.
Okay.
Of considerable size. I can't quite remember the entire, details of it, but that's probably what that is associated with.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. So I want to, now that we've covered Kennedy, Frank, I probably saw this on your Facebook page recently, but I had no idea in 2022. And I talked about this at the top of the show, Variety called Psycho the greatest American movie. And, you know, mm-hmm. You can agree or disagree, but I had no idea the writer of Psycho, Robert Bloch, wrote the book, right?
Right.
Okay. And from Wyoming, what the heck?
Yeah, 30 miles from Plainfield. He was writing it when it happened.
Wow. And it was based on Ed Gein, the character of Norman? Was it based on, I think I saw in your post, it was based on Ed Gein, the character of Norman Bates.
Completely.
Wow.
Completely. The difference between Eddie and Norman Bates is simple. He's being played by a more handsome version of Ed Gein.
Right.
But everything else is there, including, and I tell people to always watch, Anthony Perkins read that Ed chewed gum all the time.
Huh.
He did. He always had a pocket full of gum. And Tony Perkins, same thing throughout the movie. He's always breaking out a stick of gum.
That is so funny. First of all, I love that you refer to Ed Gein as Eddie.
Well, he is. He's Eddie. Guy's a goddamn Eddie. Superstar. Come on.
Somehow.
And right now, Ed Gein, okay, two major documentaries.
Yeah.
And filmmaker, first of all, Werner Herzog. Did I tell this story?
I don't know.
Of when Werner Herzog went to Plainfield to dig up Ed Gein's mother?
No, please do, though.
Oh, I will, if you can. Yeah. Who's the? I'm having a brain skip right now, but who made the Thin Red Line, director?
Wisconsin
Connection.
Yeah, it's
Malick. Thin Blue Line, sorry.
Malick. Thin Blue Line. I'm going to have to go to the Google for that one.
Yeah, he made The Known Unknown. He made a great documentary filmmaker. One, probably the greatest.
Is this like the one from the late 80s, The Thin Blue Line?
80s, yes, absolutely.
Errol Morris.
Errol Morris.
Yeah.
Thank you. Errol Morris and had interviewed Ed Gein. It's his favorite subject, period. Wow. So he interviewed Ed Gein when Ed Gein was a resident at the Central Hospital for the Criminally Insane. Is what they called it when he was in Madison. Huh. And he interviewed him and has boxes of tapes, but he never made a movie out of it. Now he is. He's about to. He and Werner Herzog made a deal. They were friends. And Errol Morris was a grad student at UW. And nice. They were going to meet in Plainfield at night, bring a shovel. We're going to dig up Ed Gein's mom.
Wow.
Augusta Gein. Well,
Augie?
Yes.
Okay.
Only one of them showed up, and that was, of course, Werner Herzog. But Werner didn't mind. You know, he didn't mind that his partner was chicken. He went right into Plainfield, got a motel room, and stayed for a couple months and made friends with everybody in Plainfield.
Oh, my gosh.
And decided to film his next movie, Stroshek. Nearby.
Did he dig
and
the mom up?
History. But now we're going to see those two attempting to commit this act of grave robbing.
Oh my gosh.
But Errol's got the goods because he interviewed Ed and he knew Ed. And Ed is always portrayed wrong. He did not have a Wisconsin accent. He was very knowledgeable. The two of them talked Freud for two entire cassette tapes.
Oh, my gosh.
What were they back then, 90 minutes?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that's a lot of talk. Errol was, Ed was like your meek uncle, but he had the same accent. And he delivered in his flat accent. He could talk in anything.
You know, it's interesting.
He's Ed Gein, of course, and he changed Hollywood forever.
Yeah. This is Pete Schwabba in Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Ring of Fire.